Georgia would be challenged for months after the election. Just not only because of how long the hand counting actually takes, but just because now, you know, there was so much confusion around it, nobody is going to be able to trust the results. All right. Welcome, everybody, to episode 2 of the Blue Sedition podcast. I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Mike Smith. What's going on, Mike? Today, we have an action-packed show. So I think, you know, we definitely want to be covering current events as often as we can. But, you know, one of the main reasons we started this podcast, this Blue Sedition podcast, was to talk a little bit about what you touched on in the first episode, which is, you know, how can the big blue states, you know, we're both in California, so especially California, how can they protect themselves from these radical nut jobs who may be legislating at the federal level? You know, what do we do there? So I'm going to kick it over to you. Just talk about, like, what do we want to do in that series? This is not one of those episodes, but what will we be doing?
So in that series, we're going to talk about basically some extrajudicial ways that the blue states in particular, the big ones who are very deeply entrenched blue and will never switch, can insulate themselves from, you know, the federal government, from overreach. You see it a lot actually right now in red states, where they try and act in ways that are, you know, outside of current law in a lot of cases, and they get sued and they have to go to federal court, and it's a big thing. But that's their end game. Their end game is they're going to keep fighting the nonsense until they get little bits through piece by piece, and eventually when they take power, that will be enough for them to just rule on high. And so in the blue states, what can we do in that eventuality to keep things, and I keep harping on this, but it's important, I think, to note things like abortion. What can we do if, for instance, a Republican comes to power, they gain the House and the Senate, and they push through a national abortion ban of some form or another? And in the blue states, I think that we are well positioned to fight those sorts of fights in these extrajudicial ways, where we have options because of just how hefty we are in terms of GDP, in terms of populace, in terms of just getting eyes on topics that are important to general people who aren't as critically online as we all are, you know. So that's going to be a segment that we'll be running over the coming weeks. I'm really excited to start brainstorming some ideas there and really just talking about playing a different side of the coin. Obviously, the right has the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025, but they've been running this since Reagan. And I think it's really important that we, blue states and legislatures therein, take a card out of that playbook and just say, you know what we need to do is we need to start pushing, you know, discussions and legislatures to make changes in these blue states that position us in a way where we can combat federal overreach. And we'll dive into that more in the coming weeks. I think it's truly fascinating and something that Democrats have not really done well. They haven't really positioned themselves against the future. They're always fighting for the next election, the down ballot election in November, et cetera, et cetera. And you never hear plans for 4 years, for 8 years, for 16 years. And that's what the Heritage Foundation and all those other right-wing think tanks are doing. They're setting goals, long-term goals and short-term goals that can build towards those. And the Democrats are just trying to get elected and trying to raise funds off of it. And so we need to start doing this at the local and state level to build up legislation, to build that broad coalition where we can fight back against the federal.
Sounds like you want California to get sued a lot.
Yes. If we're doing it right, we're going to do it just like the red states. We're going to get sued a lot. And we have the courts in California and in New York pretty much packed in ways where we have favorable judges that will get it in front of the Supreme Court when we're ready to. That's another really interesting facet of the right-wing machine. They make lawsuits all the time, and they stall the game when they need to. They don't bring them to court immediately. There's a fascinating one about Trump that he just hit the statute of limitations on suing the Department of Justice, and I think it was either today or yesterday, based on an illegal search of his Mar-a-Lago properties when they went in and got all of those classified documents that he stole, allegedly, from the White House, from the government. And he pushed that off as long as he possibly could. He was a day before the statute of limitations and filed at midnight. And he's like, we're going to sue. And he's suing for like things that are clearly illegal. Like they're suing for damages. I'm not a lawyer. I don't remember the exact terms. And they're basically outlined where the government basically will allow you to sue them because they're, you know, the power, only under certain conditions. And none of his lawsuit meets any of those conditions, but that's not his goal. His goal is to use this fight in his fundraising effort. And the right is just brutally good at this. They don't plan on winning. They plan on getting money and using that to build power in the House, in the Senate, in local elections. And the left is terrible at this. I mean, they just can't do
it. Yeah, you can see the way he did it with you know, the election lawsuits. And what's crazy is you would think that that would have to backfire. They have no evidence. They're getting laughed out of court. They're getting laughed out of court by Republican appointed judges. And what's happening? It's empowering his base.
Yeah. He was found guilty on all 34 felony convictions. The trial is blanking in my mind because there's so many that he takes to court, but he was found guilty. He's a felon now. Well, and you think
we got to be careful.
Pending appeal.
Well, he's not technically a felon until sentencing. So in New York law is you're not a felon until you're sentenced. And then also the people who are excited about him not being able to vote for himself, felons, which I'm sorry, if you're a Democrat, you should be okay with this. Felons in New York are allowed to vote. And wherever you're voting, I guess it follows the law of wherever you were convicted from. So if he's voting in Florida and he was convicted in New York, he is still allowed to vote. And personally, I'm okay with that.
I agree. But neither here nor there. The point that I think I was originally trying to make is that he takes these court losses like water off a duck. He just doesn't seem to care. If anything, it bolsters him. Said, he gets rounds and rounds of fundraising off of the incitement of his base.
Yeah.
And there's no comparison. I don't see anything on the left that even comes close. And so...
As a strategy, if he even is using it as a strategy, because it's hard to draw the line of like, is Trump just in an alternate reality, or is he actually using this as a strategy? And I think it's probably a little bit of both. The problem with Dems, I mean, you know, you could say this isn't a problem, but you know, if we saw Biden take something like this to court and you know, there was no evidence or whatever, a lot of Dems are going to be like, well, you know, that sucks. I guess there was no evidence of that. but as a general strategy, you know, to hold things up as long as you need to you know, other action take place or whatever, I think it's a smart move.
Yeah. And the right did it with, not Dobbs, but Roe. Before they were ready to actually go to the Supreme Court, they held it up at the Ninth Circuit, and they just put it off because they knew that there were going to be a vacancy soon. I mean, there was notice of oh my God, why can't I think of her name? Our the Supreme Court justice who should have retired and didn't.
RGB.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Yeah.
Not RBG. RGB.
Yes, wait, thank
red,
you.
And red, she, green, blue. Wait, huh? Huh? We're informed. Yeah,
it's we're informed and confused. There's I would kill for 1 week to have less news than most previous years. That would be great.
I mean, RBG dying feels like over a decade ago.
Yeah, but they had a Republican Senate at the time, like, well, by the split of the vote of vice president, but all they had to do was wait for presidency. They just sat on it in the court. They kept putting it off. And then when Trump won, they're like, and now it goes to Supreme Court right as soon as a new judge is enacted. What's the word for that?
Appointed.
Put into place. Appointed. Thank you. And they're just much better at it. They play strategy as a collective much better than the Democrats do.
Yeah.
Even when the Democrats have a coalition that's fighting on the same front, it doesn't feel like they're accomplishing as much.
That is a really, really good point that I just want to touch on. We have a lot we want to talk about today, but you know, Barack Obama got some things done, right? You can say that Obamacare is, you know, it's not where we want to be. I know it's not where you and I want to be. But when they had the House and the Senate, they got some things done. But I feel like they don't get the amount of things done with full control that the Republicans do, either with, a smaller margin of control, or they're not as good as the Republicans are when they're in the minority at stopping things.
Oh, my God.
They're terrible.
The Democrats are terrible at just holding things up. When the Republicans are in the minority, they're the loudest, they're the most willing to use the filibuster, they're the most willing to just campaign on how evil the opponent is and what they're trying to shove down everybody's throats, and they make it impossible to get anything substantial done. But when the Democrats aren't in control, when they're in the minority, they don't do any of that. All they do is send out mailers for, we're losing in the Senate, they're gonna repeal this and that, we need money. And I'm like, you don't do anything when you have money. Why do you want me to send you more? Anyway.
Yeah, okay. I mean, blue sedition is taking
up. Why do we need to do this at the state and local level? We need to insulate ourselves against the federal because of just how flaccid the Dems at the federal level have been and how bully the Republicans will be in either the minority or the majority.
Yes, totally agree. And I mean, yeah, you're right. They look like absolute goblins, the Republicans, when they're trying to stop us from doing something, you know, let's just shut down the government. Let's bipartisan border bill, not during your administration. Like,
No. They're children unwilling to go to bed.
Right.
I mean, you have a kid, I have a kid. When you try and get them to go to bed and they don't want to, man, they will drag that out for an hour and a half.
They'll do
you
anything.
You know what I mean?
They'll do anything.
They have no scruples. They have no embarrassment.
Yeah.
It's terrible. And the Republicans do the same thing. And maybe no embarrassment is actually a great segue into the first topic I want to talk about today.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about blue sedition generally. I know that we're going to have a fun time in the weeks to come. We're going to talk about this more. We're going to have more detailed ideas and more detailed steps that the local and state level Democratic Party can take to try and insulate ourselves. But let's talk about some people with no shame. Let's talk about some Republicans.
Yeah, I'm excited. What do you got for us? What's number one on your list?
So I want to talk about Mark Robinson. You heard about Mark Robinson?
I've heard about that guy. He's the lieutenant governor of North Carolina.
He's a nominee governor of North Carolina. I don't think he's lieutenant, but it doesn't really matter.
I thought he was the lieutenant governor. Okay.
He may have been at one time. I don't actually know. He's running this cycle, though. He's vying to be the governor of North Carolina, okay?
He is the current lieutenant governor of North Carolina.
Okay, great. That makes it worse in many ways.
It does make it worse.
So they find him online, critically. Right. He's posting all this stuff on Twitter and Truth Social, and anywhere that he has a presence. He's talking about, you know, transgender athletes and how terrible it is, and we're going to protect women and all this other stuff. And so... I mean, I'd call him a run-of-the-mill Republican these days. He's just, he's loud and obnoxious, and he'll jump on anything in the culture war that's front page news currently. But anyway, people at CNN, they found him on a pornographic website called Nude Africa.
Nude Africa. Okay. Nothing wrong with that. Okay.
No.
I mean, I'm fine with this so far.
We agree on this, you know, porn at your own leisure. It's fine. But so they did some digging on him because he's weirdly vocal in forums and on message boards and whatnot in this porn site.
Now this is him. He's posting under his name. Like he's like,
yeah, he's got the same handle everywhere. It's this mini soldier. MINISOLDR.
Okay.
Maybe it's mini soul doctor. I don't know.
Okay.
Solder. I don't know. It's, you know how handles are.
Yeah, sure.
But he does. I mean, that's his handle on Twitter. That's his handle on Pinterest, on Discus, on YouTube.
Okay.
He has a, I mean, it's everywhere. It's the same handle. And so he's posting, or somebody is posting his mini soldier on this this Nude Africa site. And the timing they find is like really in line with like when he's online and when he stops posting on his normal socials, and then he starts posting on this porn site. And he's and he's posting stuff that, you know, well, Republicans aren't supposed to say. He says, I quote, "I like watching tranny on girl porn." He claims that he's a perv himself. He's, I don't want to get into the salaciousness of his posts on there, but I do want to touch on one thing. In an older post, he pointed out that he is actually, he's a black Nazi, is what he claims.
A black that's a direct Nazi.
That's a direct quote from him on his Nude Africa account in a message board. He was arguing with somebody about, you know, that nonsense White Lives Matter gibberish, the great replacement theory stuff, and he basically said that you have an ally in me. I am a black Nazi. That's
wow.
And there's more. They found him. I mean, that's funny. Black Nazis are, they're just so what is the old saying, right? The leopards eating your face party.
Yeah, just a self-hating holy cow. So wait, can we take a step back here, because I'm really you had told me kind of briefly about this story, and I have had my head down in other things. I haven't really dug in. Can you help me understand, I guess maybe this isn't even about the story, but in general, who goes to a porn site to drop into the comments and start, I don't know, a social commentary about, like, wait, what is,
it's a little strange. I have to say, I don't really understand, but you know, I'm reminded of that line from Rick and Morty where Rick is like, why do you have I forget the porn site, but it was like a porn site account. And then Morty has like a good answer for it. He's like, it gets into your, you know, your kinks and stuff.
Right. Yeah. You can have friends, you can share similar interests. Right. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Maybe there's a community there that he feels really a part of, but
you know, if he likes watching girl on trans porn, if he's a bit of a perv, man, so far, like, I'm great with it. I draw the line at black Nazi.
Right.
I draw the line at Nazi.
I've got another quote for you since you're weighing in on these things. How about this quote? Okay. Sure. He wrote, quote, "Slavery is not bad. Some people need to be slaves. I wish they would bring it, slavery, back. I would certainly buy a few," end quote.
I would buy a few.
I think he's talking about slaves there.
Wow. What the?
Yeah. And, you know, this is a developing story. They keep finding more and more about this Mark Robinson fellow. He's got skeletons, we used to say.
Okay. So what does this mean? Like, has he already, this has been out for what, a day? Has he resigned? Has he made a statement?
He's made a statement.
Okay.
His statement is that, that he's being the target of, obviously, you know, a fake news,
of course,
smear campaign, for lack of a better word. He said that anything that was used, or anything that they allege he said in this vein, is deep fakes at best. I don't know how.
Just text comments is deep fakes.
Text comment. Okay. You know, that's, yeah. And I don't really want to give in to too much to that, because his response has been really kind of sluggish and kind of stupid. So I don't think that this is outside of the realm of possibility. I think that it's probably his account and he just got found out. But you can imagine, if you have a well-known handle that you've been using for years, what if there was somebody out there malicious enough to just like create an account in your name and say some stuff to make you look bad? Like, that's possible, right?
So it's definitely possible, but the fact that these were dated were these before he was, you know, in politics, right?
The governor, right?
Yeah,
these were dated October 11th. I'm sorry, October 2011 and March 2012.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, that's a little, you know, if somebody were setting up a 10-year plan, like,
right,
like, oh, I can't wait for the day you become a lieutenant governor. I mean, maybe. Or if it was,
yeah,
you know, if it's like you just said, and then tomorrow somebody creates an account, Mike Smith, which, by the way, you know,
right,
there's
sure,
a million of them anyway.
You'd have to be playing some very long call positions to make, yeah, that happen.
Yeah, it's a little far-fetched. Like,
and then today, okay, after his announcement, mm-hmm, it was revealed, after he announced it, after that, and he's saying it's all deepfakes and whatnot, they find out that he had created an account after he was married, on Ashley Madison, in a second, oh, sure, leak,
yep,
that came out today. So I don't know. If we're in a courtroom here, I'm painting a character's picture, and I'm starting to get an idea of the type of guy that we're talking about here with Mark Robinson.
So if this were any Democrat, and this
any
were... any Democrat, I mean, I'm not going to say today, but any Democrat 10 years ago, I mean, they're resigning. I'm thinking about Anthony Weiner. I'm thinking about, who was the SNL dude?
Al Franken.
You know, if this story comes out, if this story even, you, there's even a hint that this story is about to drop, they're resigning. Like, they've got,
yeah,
their resignation. It's already done.
Well, and that's what happened yesterday before I guess it was the day before the news broke, is like he canceled a bunch of speaking engagements that he had, and he had an official press release that was like, I'm going to have a press release in a little bit. And everyone's like, the news is about to drop. Whatever it is about to happen. And then lo and behold, you know, this was the egg. And so, yeah, I'm with you. I think that I'm going to say something, and then when that news drops, it's like, and here's my resignation announcement, or my, right, dropout letter, or whatever. Sure. I mean, you know, the Democrats bullied Biden into stepping out because he's old and tired. But like, if this happened to somebody in the party, I don't see a way forward.
No,
but because
the whole party would turn on you. The whole party would turn on you.
Or rather lack thereof, and,
yeah,
inability to feel embarrassment, I suppose.
Right.
It's amazing to me.
Now, in you know, for the GOP, it's so much more important to get anybody with that GOP label into office, especially governor, right, of North,
oh, yeah,
Carolina, than it is to be, you know. So I'm sure Trump's reaction to this was, you know.
Trump isn't talking about this guy. Not at all. He doesn't care. Trump's too far away from the down ballot initiatives to care at all. He's not stumping for Mark Robinson. It's not a thing. The similarities there, of course, is that Robinson's claiming this is fake news in very Trumpian fashion, and saying that I'm being canceled or I'm being set up, and you know, the normal right-wing talking points.
Right.
But they agree. They agree on some key issues. Obviously, their big thing that they're doing is immigration. They're loud about immigration the most. In fact, Trump today posted on his Truth Social. I'm going to read it to you because it's a post.
Okay, I'm ready.
He says, quote, "As president, I will immediately end the migrant invasion of America. We will stop all migrant flights, end all illegal entries, terminate the Kamala phone app for smuggling illegals, the CBP One app." We'll talk about that in a second. "Revoke deportation immunity, suspend refugee resettlement, and return Kamala's illegal migrants to their home countries," in parentheses, also known as remigration. We're going to touch on that in a moment. "I will save our cities and towns in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and all across America, MAGA 2024. End quote. So the first thing I want to point out about this post is that, I mean, really great job by Donald Trump spelling everything right, using proper punctuation, speaking in full sentences. I think his PR team got this one. They did a good job.
It sounds like Stephen Miller.
Yeah. That's very fair. It's probably Stephen Miller wrote this. It's got the fiery rhetoric, as CNN will put it, and it's, you know.
Okay, there's so much to unpack there. CBP One, right? So this is the app that came out 14 years. I don't know how long ago. Came out a long time ago. That was primarily used for trucking, right? I don't know. I don't know much about it, but my understanding was that it was a trucking app that was. I don't know if it was for migrants or just for foreign workers. You know, Cubans, Haitians. It was required that they use this app and even submit like biometric data. You know, yeah. So then as I was reading about it, I learned that they added this feature that also allowed, you know, immigrants who are requesting asylum, which by the way, what a great feature.
Yeah. And just really quickly, CBP, we keep throwing that out there. That's Customs and Border Patrol. This is the official United States Customs and Border Patrol, Border Protection, division of the federal government. And yeah, I think it's a great thing when people are actually facing terrible atrocities and whatnot in their countries and they want to seek asylum in another country, such as the United States, having an app. Because apps are so ubiquitous. Everybody on the planet has a phone, pretty much.
Yeah.
And can get access to these things. And having the ability to say, I'm marching with my family several thousand miles seeking asylum. And when I get there, I really need help. That's what this app is all about.
So I think there's a lot of good things here. I am, maybe we're diverging a little too much from the actual story. But I will say that just reading on it right now, it looks like in 2023, the Biden administration marked this as the only way to request asylum on the U.S.-Mexico border and to book appointments.
That's actually a holdover from the previous Trump administration, where they did away with the other options, such as seeking asylum at the border. You recall they made the migrant tents, shanty towns and whatnot, and then separated people from their kids and all those horrible, horrible things. But, you know, Biden never reinstated another option. It used to be you could get to the Mexico-United States border as a human being and in some language, whatever language you speak, say, I'm seeking asylum, I need help, and someone would help you. I mean, that's what it was. But now, if you're not trying to request asylum through this app, I think under Biden, they're probably a little more lenient. They're probably saying, like, you need to go through these rigors, you have to download this app and officially file a complaint, whatever, you know. But
And Amnesty International, it looks like here, has pointed out in a 2024 report that they describe the app's selection process as a lottery, with some people waiting over a year.
Yes.
Which, man.
And they still have, I mean, I think that conditions have probably improved under Biden's border protection agency, but I think that there are still people basically living in tents, you know, just north of the southern border in United States soil, basically waiting for their lottery, the selection to come up.
Wow.
So, well, and that's what Trump's talking about here. He's saying that this is, he's claiming that this is how Kamala and the Democrats are smuggling illegals, quote, into the country, and he's going to deport them. He's just going to kick them all out. It's not great. Another thing, I mentioned this, that was the first one. The second one is this word that he used, remigration. What is that? So remigration is, it's a term, it's popularized by groups in pan-European ethno-nationalist movements. You can tell I read that one, but their policy is of no surprise, though. It's to reverse the so-called Great Replacement.
Right.
That has big air quotes around it.
Right.
So it's more Great Replacement theory, but more than anything, it's another dog whistle that Trump is peppering into his posts. And you can tell this is how you know it's Stephen Miller writing this and not Trump, because
right.
Stephen Miller is loudly winking at his base, at Trump's base, going, we know what gets you guys going. We know what you guys like. You like this idea of the Great Replacement theory and us fighting against it. And so here's a term right out of that playbook.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not, I don't know. Everybody should be screaming about this, especially the way that they're talking about immigrants. I mean, deportation of immigrants, you know, the only way to do something like that is massive detention camps. I mean, you know, there's just no way to coordinate something like that. Not only would it have a devastating effect on our economy, which it already has, you know, if you look at the deportation programs in places like Florida, you'll see that it's having a horrible impact on the local economy. I mean, it's so mind-numbingly stupid. But then the racist undertones of it, and these people who are walking around acting like Christians, who are basically saying anyone who looks brown, anyone who's poor, anyone who speaks another language, you know, get them the hell out of here, which is just about the least Christian thing you could do.
Yeah. And it's driving policy. I mean, that's the biggest problem, right? Is that if Trump takes over at the federal level, he's going to try and do this. And like you said, well, we have all of these asylum seekers already within our borders in these boy, I don't want to call them internment camps, but that's what they would become, because they would be interned until they were deported. And like, so in a certain era of the past, it turns out there's a cheaper way to handle that. And it's not a good one.
So I just want to, before we move on to, I think, our final topic of the day, there's a movie that was just released, a documentary that's just released. I think it's in select cities right now. I've gotten to watch a good portion of it. It's called Borderland, The Line Within. It's by Pamela Yates, who has done like a lot of other, you know, similar movies along this line. But it follows undocumented immigrant families, and you know, basically the process, the threats, you know, everything that's happened to them through this. And it really dives into I think what she coined probably as the border industrial complex, which is basically how are we making money off of you know, immigration. And so I think it's a really, really powerful documentary. I have not gotten to see the whole thing, and I'm excited to watch it. Or you know, not excited, you know, but this is the wrong word.
It'll be an interesting watch.
Yeah. So highly recommend.
Probably opening in ways that you cannot come back from.
Yes, exactly. okay. So great topics. What's next on the list?
So the last one I think we want to talk about here sort of circles back to that idea that we had at the outset of the blue sedition movement, we're calling it, the idea of needing to insulate ourselves and build up our state and local courts and legislatures so that in the event of a right-wing takeover, which, you know, probably they'll come to power at some point, we'll have a way to push back and defend ourselves. And here's just an example of the flip, the, you know, the other side of that coin. This is the Republicans doing some, I wouldn't say extrajudicial, because they have the courts in their packed favor at the moment. But so this comes out of Georgia. So the election board down in Georgia has voted to require hand counted ballots for the upcoming election. You recall, of course, in 2020, when Biden won the election, it actually came down to Georgia. It was Georgia, and they were ensuring counting, recounting, recounting, and ensuring that the counts were correct. And that's where the infamous Trump call came from, where he tried to convince Brian Kemp, I believe, that mm-hmm. he just needed, you know, 13,000 votes or something to that effect to win the election. And he knows that people voted illegally, and he just wants to make it right, and, you know, committed a crime, but we'll do that a different day. And so, well, what's the game plan here, Nate? I mean, why go through this process of making them hand count ballots?
So let's talk about it. There's a lot of things here. So number one, this is 45 days, ironically, right? 45 days before the November 5th election. And so yeah. There's so many things, like we talked about in the beginning of this episode, that the Republicans are really, really good at. The timing of this, to implement a change like this so close to an election, is going to cause confusion and logistical challenges. It's just going to be an absolute nightmare, right?
Yeah.
So if this were to actually go through, by the way, it was voted 3-2 in a pro-Trump majority by the Georgia State Election.
Down partisan lines, sure. Yeah.
If this were to take effect, the logistical nightmare of this, I mean, Georgia would be challenged for months after the election, just not only because of how long the hand counting actually takes, but just because now, you know, there was so much confusion around it, nobody is going to be able to trust the results, which, if you're the party that believes you're going to lose, and you're trying to grab power, this is one of the great ways to do that.
And especially since, like we said, you know, last time, that was their gambit. They said, no, you know, things are untoward. We're going to sue and sue and sue in Georgia because it took so long to get these ballots counted, and we know we won. And that was their, you know, Hail Mary. They lost it that first time around. But this time around, they're just sowing more seeds. They're making it more plausible by pushing back how long it takes to count ballots from election night until, like you said, you know, weeks potentially, or maybe a month down the line after the election's concluded. Nobody on the right will believe or support a loss in Georgia. They'll just write it off as the election was stolen. I mean, that has to be their end game for this play, right?
I mean, well, what they've been doing since, you know, 2020, right? Or even honestly, since before the 2016 election, before Election Day, Trump was trying to undermine the trust and the public confidence in the election process, just in case, you know, he lost. And I think everybody thought but I think the majority of people thought he would lose the 2016 election, and probably in the back of his mind, he did too. And so he started undermining that trust in the process, and that's exactly what this does too. It's going to be an absolute nightmare. Even Georgia's Republican Attorney General warned the board that this action probably illegal and would exceed their authority and is going to be challenged.
It'll be challenged.
Yeah. So now the problem is, how quickly can it get challenged? I mean, there's going to be Dem lawmakers on the ground there that are going to try and put a stop to this before any movement or confusion can take place.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is going to be one of those cases that Mark Elias and his group is going to take up. I'm 99% certain of that. He spearheads all of these last minute voter chicanery plays that the Republicans like to do. And he comes in and he, you know, demands a stay on the actual thing, on the actual implementation of that law or that change, from a court. And in this jurisdiction, I sort of expect that you're right. He's probably going to get that stay through the next 45 days. Probably. I'm not a lawyer. You know, we obviously don't know for sure. I haven't actually heard Mark Elias say he's going to take this up, but this is the type of thing that he would usually spearhead. So I'm looking forward to hearing that his camp and his group is going to take that up.
I mean,
getting back to what, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, even with the Republican Attorney General in Georgia coming out and saying, this probably a little overreach here. I mean, obviously this kind of news is worrisome.
It is.
And with the leaked emails and everything that's been coming out.
Yep.
But I just don't see this going into effect by election day.
I hope not. And I mean, when we look at the current state of the general election as it's polling today, Georgia sort of feels out of play for Kamala anyway. That might change, obviously, in the coming months. I think she's going to spend her time in Michigan and Pennsylvania, and maybe a bit of time in Nevada and Arizona. But I mean, looking back at 2016, like you were saying, Hillary lost in Georgia by, I mean, easily 200,000 ballots. I mean, it wasn't honestly that close. You go district by district, obviously she won the ones that you expect her to, but turnout was so not energized. It wasn't, yeah. She just didn't bring anybody to the game.
Yeah.
Obviously Biden won in 2020. So people were at the very least energized to try and sit the bad man down. but I don't know that Kamala is going to be able to bring it in Georgia. We'll just have to wait and see. And I'm with you. I'm very hopeful that this one gets struck down. It's clearly for no reason other than to intimidate poll workers,
yeah,
and try and get some pro-Trump counters in there who are going to misplace a Kamala ticket here and there. And, you know, you swing a couple of thousand of those and then it's a different election.
Yeah,
I'm not suggesting that their plan is to literally steal this election, but it sort of, you know, gives away the game plan of, well, now the books are open for chicanery. I hate to keep using that word, but they're going to play games and they're going to do it at every level of the election.
I mean, to tie this back into, I think, our motif, right, is this, yeah, represents a concerning trend of undermining the democratic norms, you know, and institutions for partisan gain. And, you know, imagine a Republican governor, because it's happened plenty of times in the past, takes over California. And what does California do to protect itself from one man, one person, you know, starting to undermine the democratic norms and institutions that we've had in place to protect, you know, the core of our democracy, which is,
yeah,
voting and voting rights.
Well, I don't want to get ahead into the blue sedition stuff too much, but I will hint at it a little bit because I do think it's an exciting thing. And the answer to that is that at the state level, at least California and New York and many other states still have the option of ballot initiatives to bully governors into doing what they're supposed to. And you saw this most recently in, where was it? Was it Arkansas or Wyoming or something to that effect? Maybe, no, you know what? I think it was Missouri. I think it was Missouri most recently, where there was a ballot initiative that got the correct number of signatures, well over the number of signatures required to have enshrining abortion as a right into their state's constitution. And they were going to bring it to the populace. They're going to have the state people vote on it. And their governor and their DA tried to get around that by saying, no, you didn't, you know, file the blah, blah, blah form in time. And it tried to just give them the runaround, basically. And that one went to court and they were eventually beaten. And so the ballot initiative is going to be on, you know, the November election ticket. It's going to be there, and they're going to have the option, they're going to have the ability to enshrine abortion into their state's constitution. And so that's one of the things we're going to touch on in Blue Sedition. Is I want to talk about ballot initiatives. I want to talk about the legislation pushes we need to do, how we need to rally the people. And I'm just really looking forward to talking those things out, workshopping those ideas.
I think just to touch on ballot initiatives, I see that as a good, maybe very soon episode. We should talk about some of the major ballot initiatives across the country that everybody should be paying attention to for November. I think that'll be that'll be a fun one. Just real quick, you know, anyone that's listening, maybe if you're from Georgia or you're, you know, you don't even have to be, but you can contact, you know, the Office of the Secretary of State and voice your opposition, because I think even he has. So I think that's they need to hear from you.
Yeah, it's going to come down to, a lot of this is really just going to come down to civil noisemaking. I don't want to say unrest. It's going to come down to actual people in their actual lives getting on the phone and talking to another human and making them understand your positions, our positions.
Yeah. Great. I mean, I hate to say like great episode, because those topics are all fucking miserable and this is feeling awful. But you know, we just got to continue to spread awareness and talk about these things, get them out in the open, put reality in people's faces, because I think so many people are living in an alternate reality. And you know, you're not going to realize it before it's too late, how these things are going to affect you, you know, personally. Do you have anything else you want to talk about before we sign off?
That is all I have for this fantastic episode of Blue Sedition. Just want to thank everybody for coming and listening to us. It's been a great day. And on an up note, I do think that we can start turning some of these things around, and we'll talk about those in future episodes.
Yeah, awesome. All right. My name's Nate Brady. That's Mike Smith. Thanks so much for listening to Blue Sedition, and we will catch you next time.
Cheers.